for antiwar.com and Chaos Radio 95.9 FM in Austin, Texas. I'm Scott Horton, and this is Anti-War Radio. Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton, and that's Motorhead playing in the background, as if you couldn't tell. And so this is Anti-War Radio on Radio Chaos 95.9 and 92.7 FM in Austin, Texas, and we're streaming live worldwide on the internet, KAOS959.com. Raji, if you can hear me. I can't get through to Beirut, man, so give me a call. Check your email if you're listening out there. I'm supposed to interview Raji, fan of the show, lives in Beirut. And I try to inform my ignorance about Lebanon. But the doo-doo-doo says all circuits are busy now to get into that country. Gee, I hope Israel didn't invade you guys again. All right, go ahead and call in. Check your email. I got the number in there, and I'll bring you up as soon as you call in if you can hear this, and we'll try to do this interview anyway, bro, if you're out there. And for the rest of you, 646-6446-646-6446. If you're listening from out of town, it's 512. It's called Austin, Texas, 512-646-6446. And I want to start the show out today with this article by William S. Lind. It's called U.S. Military Riding the Perfect Sine Wave. And, sine in parentheses, so it's kind of a tiny bit funny. Anyway, point is, William S. Lind is a military strategist kind of guy. He spends his weekends hanging around with generals talking about, you know, what's the best way to go around killing people if you got to and that sort of thing. But he's a non-interventionist. He's a paleoconservative. In his words, a real conservative, as opposed to the neocons and you know, dumb American voters who follow them. He's a real conservative and is therefore against the American empire, which is, to anyone with eyeballs, the surest way to destroy our society and our liberty here at home is to wage permanent war overseas. So the man's no dummy, and in fact, he's, I don't know if the inventor, but at least one of the primary proponents of the theory of fourth generation warfare, which says that basically we're fighting warfare. He says fourth generation warfare is basically generation negative one. It's going back to before the Treaty of Westphalia and the monopoly nation states to basically just private armies, whoever can get together to fight. And because of the ideology and because of the circumstances of the occupations and the enemy, he points out that this fourth generation warfare is completely different than most situations in the past where you had an army versus non-combatants. Usually you have an army versus, you know, civilians, it's one big battle and the whole thing's over, right? But nowadays, since everybody can get their hands on an AK-47 pretty much, well, everywhere in the world except America maybe, and even here, and because the occupation and the civilizational clash and such is of a nature, it's so strong. The differences are so strong between the occupiers and the occupiees that the occupiees are willing to go to lengths to fight the occupation that have not been seen before. And so anyway, it's fourth generation warfare means post-state armies, basically. And well, let me give you an analogy here. This is from William Lind. I believe he repeated this on my radio show at one point. He was talking about fourth generation warfare to, I think, a Marine Corps general who said, "Oh, my boys fight fourth generation warfare. My snake eater, guerrilla, anti-insurgency guys, they fight fourth generation warfare. They know all about fourth generation warfare." And William Lind says, "Oh, yeah?" He goes, "Yeah, I'm an expert in fourth generation warfare myself. This is what I'm all about." And William Lind said, "Oh, yeah, will you strap your daughter with explosives and send her out to the market to blow herself up?" And the general said, well, no. And he said, "All right, then, you don't know the first thing about fourth generation warfare. Sit down and listen," basically. Anyway, so that's William S. Lind. He's a right winger. He's a conservative. He's from the Free Congress Foundation. In fact, he's the director of the Center for Cultural Conservatism at the Free Congress Foundation. And I tell you all that just so I can tell you this. From his article today, "Looking idly at the front page of last Wednesday's Washington Post Express as I rode the metro to work, I received a shock. It showed a railroad station in Iraq recently destroyed by an American airstrike. So now we are bombing the railroad stations in a country we occupy? What comes next? Bombing Iraq's power plants and oil refineries? How about the Green Zone? If the Iraqi parliament doesn't pass the legislation we want it to, we can always lay a couple of J-dams on it." It turns out the bombed railroad station was no fluke. An AP story by Charles J. Hanley dated June 5th reported that, quote, "U.S. warplanes have again stepped up attacks in Iraq, dropping bombs at more than twice the rate of a year ago. And it appears to be accomplished by a rise in Iraqi civilian casualties. In the first 4.5 months of 2007, American aircraft dropped 237 bombs and missiles in support of ground forces in Iraq, already surpassing the 229 expended in all of 2006, according to Air Force figures obtained by the Associated Press. Nothing could testify more powerfully to the failure of U.S. efforts on the ground in Iraq than a ramp up in airstrikes. Calling in air is the last desperate and usually futile action of an army that is losing. If anyone still wonders whether the surge is working, the increase in airstrikes offers a definitive answer. It isn't. Worse, the growing number of airstrikes shows that despite what the Marines have accomplished in Anbar Province and General Petraeus' best efforts, our high command remains as incapable as ever of grasping fourth generation war." And now listen closely to this. This is William S. Lind, from the director of the Center for Cultural Conservatism at the Free Congress Foundation, military strategist, Marine Corps guy. I think he's a former Marine. "To put it bluntly, there is no surer or faster way to lose in fourth generation war than by calling in airstrikes. It is a disaster on every level. Physically, it inevitably kills far more civilians than enemies, enraging the population against us and driving them into the arms of our opponents. Mentally, it tells the insurgents we are cowards who only dare fight them from 20,000 feet in the air. Morally, it turns us into Goliath, a monster every real man has to fight. So negative are the results of airstrikes in this kind of war. There is only one possible good number of them. Zero. Unless we are employing the Hama model, which we are not. And the Hama model, that's a reference to the Syrian government's massacre of 15,000 or so members of the Muslim Brotherhood in a massive protest years back. And he's saying, you know, that's when you can use airstrikes. When your model is kill them all, then airstrikes can be very effective. But that's not the model we're following. At least, hopefully, not yet. What explains this military lunacy beyond simple desperation? Part of the answer, I suspect, is Air Force generals. This is, again, William S. Lind writing. Jointness demands that they get their share of command billets in Iraq, and with very few exceptions, they are mere military technicians. They know how to put bombs on targets, but they know nothing else. So they do what they know how to do, with no comprehension of the consequences. Boy, doesn't that just sound like every single government program in the history of mankind. In fact, the U.S. Air Force recently announced it is developing its own counterinsurgency doctrine, precisely because some people are suggesting airstrikes are counterproductive in such conflicts. Well, yes, that is what anyone with any understanding of counterinsurgency would suggest. The Air Force, of course, cares not a whit about the realities of counterinsurgency. It cares only about protecting its bureaucratic turf, its myth of winning through air power, and its high-performance fighter bombers, which truly are its knights in shining armor, useful only for tournaments. Once again, we see the U.S. military riding the perfect sine wave. It will seem as if it is beginning to get things right, only to ride the wave back down again into the depths of unknowing. And, well, I'll go ahead and finish here. Lind writes, it brings to mind one of my favorite Bob Newhart skits. Newhart is walking slowly behind a line of an infinite number of monkeys seated at an infinite number of typewriters trying to write the world's great books. Bob pauses behind one of the monkeys. Fred, come here a minute. I think this one's got something. To be or not to be, that is the... forget about it, Fred. In this case, the is airstrikes in fourth-generation warfare, and the monkey is wearing Air Force blue. And what an apt analogy. Apt, I tell ya. Yeah, so there you go. 2007, June 2007. Oh, Jesus Christ, listen to this, y'all. Oh, my God. All right. Okay, well, I heard from Raji. I figured out why I can't get through to Lebanon. You know, I joked with the operator when I was trying to get through to Raji in Beirut. I said, well, geez, I hope Israel didn't invade them again. But now I understand why I can't get through to my guest today. Scott, I'm terribly sorry. Everything was off since the major explosion here, an assassination in Beirut, which so far has left 10 dead, including a member of parliament, which I guess he saw on the internet already. Which I didn't. I guess I should have Googled Lebanon. The internet was off and just got back to working now. The cellular networks all across Lebanon are out of connection still as yet. I feel terrible. I'm all out of words. Well, geez, man, I'm terribly sorry. And I know it's my government's fault, too. That's the fucked up thing. I'm not certain, you know, I don't know who blew up what in Lebanon today. But I know that the recent fighting is because of my government. My government backing Al-Qaeda in Lebanon. My government backing Al-Qaeda in Lebanon to fight Hezbollah. You know, Hezbollah, that's not America's enemy. That's Israel's enemy. You know, Israel, that foreign country, that separate, distinct, sovereign state that is not part of America. America's backing, was backing, at least, shit, maybe they still are, backing Fatah al-Islam, the local Al-Qaeda affiliate in Lebanon, to fight against Hezbollah. And of course, that didn't last more than a couple of months before Fatah al-Islam teamed up with Hezbollah to fight against the other American puppets The ones our government actually control, apparently. The government of Lebanon. The Sinoric government of Lebanon. And so the fighting broke out a couple of weeks back. I guess from the reports I read, it was a bank robbery gone awry. And when the guys got chased back into their own neighborhood, basically there was a battle. And the whole thing blew up from there. And now American Al-Qaeda, I guess you could call them that, Fatah al-Islam, a.k.a. American Al-Qaeda, in Iraq, in southern Lebanon, now causing widespread destruction across that country. See, that's what they call blowback, the unintended consequences of covert activities. The unintended consequences of American interventionism in other people's countries that are primarily kept secret from the American people so that we don't know what's happening. We go, oh no, Al-Qaeda is starting, you know, battles with the government in Lebanon. That's terrible. And we don't know because, what, 1% of us read the New Yorker magazine, which... I only ever read the Seymour Hersh. I don't even know what else is in there. but for those of us who read The Redirection by Seymour Hersh, we know at least that Seymour Hersh had multiple sources telling him at the beginning of this year that America was backing Al-Qaeda. Remember the 3,000 people that died on September 11th? The guys that did that. They're friends. America's backing them, reported Seymour Hersh back in February. The Redirection is the name of the article. And now Google, just go Google Fatah al-Islam and you will see they are now at war against the Lebanese government. It's sort of like the William S. Lind article, right? Air Force General says, well, crap, I got all these planes. There's a war going on. I want to make some money here. I want to drop some bombs here. I want to have to go buy some new bombs so that the companies trying to sell them to me will buy me coke and whores. I want attention. I'm an Air Force general. Pay attention to me. I know. Let's come up with a doctrine for fighting counterinsurgency with air power. It's the same kind of idiocy. It's just pure idiocy. It reminds me of the late, great Harry Brown. Government doesn't work. It just doesn't work. You can't put these people in charge, really, of anything, particularly going around mass murdering people and backing this terrorist group or that one. I mean, where do we get Al-Qaeda in the first place? Al-Qaeda is the culmination of 50 years of American foreign policy, not just aggravating people in the Middle East, but actively supporting the religious right wing. American policy during the Cold War was to screw the nationalists and obviously screw the leftists in favor of the right-wing religious crazies. We've done this all over the place. That's what the Muslim Brotherhood is. American foreign policy. So we said, yeah, let's use these Mujahideen crazies to fight the Russians in Afghanistan. Zbigniew Brzezinski, according to Gareth Porter, in a speech, question and answer period, at a speech that he gave just last week, somebody asked him, hey man, so was it really worth it to create the Mujahideen in order to bring down the Soviet Union? Do you have any regrets? And Zbigniew Brzezinski said, no regrets. Admittedly, having the Soviet Union gone is pretty good. And notice it was when they stopped containing communism and started encouraging it to expand that Soviet communism overreached and destroyed itself. There may be a lesson for you in there. Maybe two. The whole containment policy was bullshit all along. And two, overextension leads to the destruction of your empire. There's a couple, you know, if I can give you a helping hand there. And so now what are we doing? Well, gee, Hezbollah, according to my Israeli handlers, apparently are a terrible threat to America somehow. What should we do? I know. Let's back Al-Qaeda to fight them. And who cares if we reduce Raji's country to rubble, right? Who cares if we start another civil war in Lebanon? I can't hear him scream from here, can you? I can't smell the burning corpses, can you? So who cares? There's water between here and there. Fuck it. Let's back Al-Qaeda against Israel's enemies. Let's back our own enemies against a foreign country's enemies because they're more important. Why not? You know what I think we should do? Here's what I think we should do. I think we should just go to every country, just make a phone call to the whoever happens to be in control of the state in every country in the world, and just ask them, do you have any enemies? And is there any way that we can destroy ourselves by fighting your enemies for you? Let's go fight the enemies of the state in Zimbabwe, right? Robert Mugabe. He's not any less of a fascist than the Olmert government. I know, I know. They let Jewish Israelis vote, and, well, even Arab Israelis vote in for the Knesset, but they sure don't let the people in the Gaza Strip or the West Bank vote, do they? And, oh, and when they do, they repudiate the vote and wage war against the people they elect. They certainly don't get to choose members of the Israeli parliament. So, fuck it. Let's go back Robert Mugabe. Hey, Robert Mugabe, is there anybody in your country that you consider a terrorist? Maybe we should back Al-Qaeda against them. Maybe we should find the Zimbabwe equivalent of Fatah al-Islam and back them against whoever Robert Mugabe has a problem with. Why not? You know what we ought to do? Let's help the Russians crush the Chechens. Why not? They're religious crazies. They're right-wing jihadist, foreign, you know, religious jihadist, crazy pilgrim, you know, 72 virgins in heaven types. Come on. Let's go fight all Russia's enemies for them. Oh, no, then we'd have to blow ourselves up, because we're Russia's only real enemy. Jeez. Why should it be that Americans have to die for Israel? Why should it be that? And don't call me an anti-Semite. I'm Jewish enough that I'm immune from your anti-Semite criticism. I'm an American. I'm a human being and I'm an American. And I'm interested in the future of my country. And supporting some foreign country to the exact detriment of the interests of my country, I think, is a bad idea. That's my position and I'm sticking to it. Hezbollah is not my enemy. Hezbollah's never attacked the United States. And don't give me that, oh, they blew up the barracks in 83, our Marines were trespassing on their property, and Ronald Reagan did the right thing when it happened and said, oh, and got them out. And I'm not even certain that was Hezbollah behind that anyway. I think it was a different group. But anyway, that's not an attack on America. They certainly have done everything they can to avoid the impression that they're America's enemies. And where did Hezbollah even come from? You know, there was no such thing as Hezbollah in 1982, but there was in 1983. What happened? Oh, Israel invaded Lebanon to fight the PLO. Remember them, the secular communists? The guys who didn't do suicide bombings? Yeah, they had to have a full-scale war against Arafat and the PLO. And in the process, they created an indigenous resistance movement among Arab Shia in Lebanon that now goes by the name of Hezbollah. That's where they came from in the first place. Sort of like the Klan came from the northern occupying army in the south. That's just what happens when you have an occupying army. Locals get together with rifles and form militias. You might have noticed a little bit of that's been going on in Iraq over the last few years. But no, apparently, not only is it the case, or I guess it used to be the case, that whatever's good for Israel is good for the United States of America, even if that's not true, oh well. But now apparently, even what is obviously directly against the interests of the United States of America and the American people doesn't matter. As long as it's good for Israel, screw you. That's right. It's time to back Al-Qaeda in Lebanon to fight Israel's enemies for them. And then you see the result. You see the result. See, I had a radio show today all planned out. I was going to interview Raji, fan of the show from Beirut, and say, Raji, tell me all about Lebanon, man. I want to know. Fill me in. But I can't get through to him. Why? Because war is breaking out in Lebanon. Because of my government and its intervention in that country's affairs. When did the Civil War end? 92? Was it later than that? Well, that's no good. That's no good. A lack of civil war in Lebanon. Well, we got to do something about that. See if I can find the news story that my guest was referring to. I see fighting at the refugee camp where Fatah al-Islam is based. Oh, here's USA Today. Beirut blast latest to hit Lebanon. From the Associated Press, an explosion rocked Beirut's popular seafront area Wednesday, killing at least four people, including an anti-Syrian lawmaker who was close to slain former Prime Minister Rafi Hariri, a TV station said. The explosion killed Walid Ido, his son, and two bodyguards, according to Future TV, which is close to Lebanon's anti-Syrian bloc. Ido was an ally of Saad Hariri, the leader of the parliamentary majority of and the son of Rafi Hariri, who was assassinated 2 years ago in a Beirut car bombing. A car was in flames and black smoke was seen rising from a narrow street off the main waterfront in Manara, which is in the Muslim sector of the capital. The Lebanese Broadcasting Corporation TV station said the explosion came from a bomb-rigged car, a method that has been used to assassinate opponents of Syria over the past 2 years. Yeah, that's a little vague. A woman covered in blood and screaming in agony was seen being pulled away from the scene by residents. A man also was carried away as police sealed off the area, which is near an amusement park and a military club. The explosion shattered windows of apartments in the area, knocked down walls, and scattered debris. The explosion was the latest to hit Lebanon in the last 3 weeks as its troops battled Islamic militants in a Palestinian refugee camp in the northern part of the country. So, I guess, you know, AP assumes that Syria did it. Must have been, right? I mean, after all, if Syria is an enemy of Israel, then they must have done, you know, whatever it is. That way we can have an excuse to kill some of them too, you know? Yeah. All right, this is Anti-War Radio. The number here is 646-646-646-6446. If you're listening from out of town, that number is 512-646-6446. This is Radio Chaos 95.9 FM in dang darn Austin, Texas.
Statue of Liberty. small dog searching for aluminum cans, and he holds on tight to his dignity.
Pressing moral issue in the United States right now?
I think it is the acceptance just recently that we now promote preemptive war. I do not believe that's part of the American tradition. We in the past have always declared war in the defense of our liberties or go to aid somebody. But now we have accepted the principle of preemptive war. We have rejected the just war theory of Christianity. And now, tonight, we hear that we're not even willing to remove from the table a preemptive nuclear strike against a country that has done no harm to us directly and is no threat to our national security. I mean, we have to come to our senses about this issue of war and preemption and go back to traditions and our Constitution and defend our liberties and defend our rights, but not to think that we can change the world by force of arms and to start wars.
Thank you, Congressman. Senator Brownback really wants to weigh in as well.
All right, that's Dr. Ron Paul saying what ought to be... What, obvious to 100% of the American people? It's not okay to start a war. Particularly, it's not okay to start a war and use nuclear weapons. How about this? How about it's not okay to start a war and use nuclear weapons against a third world country with virtually no navy, an Air Force that RF-15s could kill in an afternoon, and no nuclear capacity whatsoever. No nuclear weapons capacity whatsoever. How about that? You want to destroy America forever? Start a nuclear war. And see what happens. And you know, this sounds crazy. If you don't read Commentary Magazine. But if you read Commentary Magazine, you go, oh my God. These freaks are serious. Norman Podhoretz and Joshua Moravchik and William Kristol. Certainly Dick Cheney and David Woomser and Stephen Hadley, David Addington, Elliot Abrams, Abram Shulsky. And the rest of the Dick Cheney neocon cabal of criminals and mass murderers in the vice president's office, on the National Security Council, and in the Pentagon. This is what they want. And they're open about it. They are open about it. Ron Paul was the only one of 10 Republican congressmen to say, first strike preemptive nuclear war against a country that's never attacked us and doesn't even have nukes at all. What the hell? No. Wrong. One out of 10. It sounds crazy until you see 9 out of 10 Republicans saying, yeah, I'll nuke them bastards. That's what Israel wants. Here's the thing. You start a nuclear war, you got a nuclear war. I mean, at least a one-sided nuclear war. But once you start, you know, splitting and fusing atoms together in other people's countries, do any of us think that, you know, the whole thing will just be over in a week and there won't be consequences? Or maybe the only consequences will be wonderful benefits. It does sound insane. You know, it sounds like I might as well be warning that the sky is going to fall. Who would be crazy enough to start a nuclear war against a country that never attacked us? Well, the people who control our state right now, and 9 out of 10 of the Republicans vying for it, and what, 8 out of 10 or 7 out of 9 or whatever on the Democratic side, who also support a preemptive war against Iran. Only Gravel and Kucinich have renounced such a thing on the Democratic side. John Edwards, Hillary Clinton, and Barack Obama, they're all for leaving the nuclear option on the table. And they've all said so repeatedly, that it's a tolerable idea for America to attack Iran with nuclear weapons. A country that has done nothing to America. And, you know, it's just maddening to me to hear people say, well, you know, they blew up the barracks there behind that barracks bombing in 1983. Yeah, well, Ronald Reagan, who was Jesus Christ on earth, supposedly the greatest Republican president since Richard Nixon, he didn't go to war against Iran over the Beirut bombing. He didn't think that was the casus belli to start a full-scale invasion of that country or, you know, sustained bombing campaign. So, you all think you're better than Reagan, huh? Well, okay. That's not really fair, because I know that just about everyone in the whole world is better than Reagan. You know, just for not being him. But Reagan didn't start a war against Iran. You want to bring up to me a 24-year-old casus belli? That's the best the war party has? Oh, Iran, they have attacked us. Don't you remember when you were 7? Hell, there are some people in this audience weren't even born yet when that happened. This is like, oh yeah, we got attacked Saddam Hussein. Don't you know that he used American-bought chemical munitions against Kurds who were fighting against him in the Iran-Iraq war, and that we helped them do it? Well, we got to invade that country. Seems like they just really don't put any work into the lies. You know, can't you make up something? Can't you tell a lie about Iran that'll actually frighten me or something? Something that seems like it's possibly true? Instead, you're telling me that it's Iran behind the Taliban, as opposed to Pakistan behind the Taliban. What an obvious lie. You tell me they're going to have a nuclear weapon any day now, even though I know that all they got is first-generation Urenco pieces of crap that they bought at AQ Khan's garage sale. That they haven't been able to enrich uranium to higher than, 3.6%. Which you can't make a bomb out of. Or maybe I'm supposed to believe that Iran is responsible for the Sunni insurgency in Iraq. You know, don't bother trying to come up with a plausible lie to justify another mass murder spree in the Middle East. Don't bother trying to come up with any sort of credible threat. Just lie. That's all. You can have your war. Hey, let's do a little contest. Just for your own pleasure. I'm not giving away any prizes. I don't have any prizes. See if you can count the lies in this clip of Senator Joe Lieberman on Face the Nation Sunday.
And the firmness, as I can tell you coming back from Iraq, Bob, is that you can't look at Iraq in a vacuum. What we're involved in here, as General Lute said to our committee last week, is the Iraq is now the main front in the long war we are fighting against the Islamist terrorists who attacked us on 9/11. In fact, 90% of the suicide bombers in Iraq today, killing Iraqis and American soldiers, are foreign al-Qaeda fighters. Iran is training and equipping soldiers, Iraqis, to commit and kill American soldiers and Iraqis. So we've got to see that larger context, and that's why we're committed to helping the Iraqis to stability and victory.
Well, let me just ask you about Iran. You brought up Iran. What should we do? Because we continue to hear more and more of just what you're saying. What should the United States do at this point about Iran?
It's very important, Bob, because I didn't just go to Iraq. I went visited throughout the Arab world and Israel. And what you see throughout the Middle East is Iran in battle, basically with us and the moderates, supplying the extremists in Iraq, Hezbollah in Lebanon, Hamas fighting the Fatah faction, our allies among the Palestinians, and, of course, committing terrorist acts against the Israelis. I'm not one to say we shouldn't sit down with the Iranians. I'm glad we did that in Baghdad a while ago. Well, what we did was present them with evidence that we have, that I've seen, that I believe is incontrovertible, that the Iranians are training and equipping Iraqi extremists to come into Iraq, and they're killing American soldiers and Iraqis. And I think this is a very important moment. If we're going to sit and talk with the Iranians, tell them what we want them to do, which is to stop doing that because it's killing Americans, we can't leave it at that. I think we've got to be prepared to take aggressive military action against the Iranians to stop them from killing Americans in Iraq. And to me, that would include a strike over the border into Iran, where we have good evidence that they have a base at which they are training these people coming back into Iraq to kill our soldiers.
Well, let's just stop right there, because I think you probably made some news here, Senator Lieberman. You're saying that if the Iranians don't let up, that the United States should take military action.
I am, and I want to make clear, I'm not talking about a massive ground invasion of Iran, but we have good evidence. We've told them. We've said so publicly that the Iranians have a base in Iran at which they are training Iraqis who are coming in and killing Americans. By some estimates, they have killed as many as 200 American soldiers. Well, we can tell them we want them to stop that. But if there's any hope of the Iranians living according to the international rule of law and stopping, for instance, their nuclear weapons development, we can't just talk to them. If they don't play by the rules, we've got to use our force. And to me, that would include taking military action to stop them from doing what they're doing.
Would you
now.
Go in on the ground, or could you do that from the air?
I'd leave that to the generals in charge. I think you could probably do a lot of it from the air. But they can't believe that they have immunity for training and equipping people to come in and kill Americans. It's just we cannot let them get away with it. If we do, they'll take that as a sign of weakness on our part, and we will pay for it in Iraq and throughout the region and ultimately right here at home.
Oh, boy, yeah, Iran is going to come here and attack us right here at home. Wow, so hang on, let me count. I got to write down here at home. Home. This is Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton. You're listening to Chaos Radio 95.9 FM in Austin, Texas. So let's see, that's one, two, well, how many lies did you get? I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I got 11 lies from Joe Lieberman out of that short interview. How many did you get? 646-6446-646-6446. If you're listening out of town, what the hell, man? Nobody calls the goddamn show anymore. 646-512-646-6446. 512-646-6446. And let's just go through the list here. First lie that I could have missed some. I only saw 11. There could have been as many as 3 or 4 dozen. After all, he was talking for, you know, almost 5 minutes there. First lie, Iraq is the main front in the war on terror. No, the main front in the war on terror is in Pakistan. That's where bin Laden and Zawahiri are. That's where most of whatever's left of al-Qaeda is. The vast majority of the religious jihadists who've gone to Iraq and gone home again will be much better handled by their own governments back home. If we leave, they don't really have much of a jihad to fight. The fact of the matter is, there was no al-Qaeda in Iraq, despite Joe Lieberman's lies before the Iraq war. It's the American presence in Iraq that has created the opportunity for al-Qaeda to come and help the Sunni insurgency fight against our occupation. It is the gift, the hoped-for but unexpected gift to bin Laden, in the words of Michael Scheuer, the former chief of the CIA's bin Laden station. The American presence has created a haven for al-Qaeda, and the longer we occupy the place, the better a haven they have. If this is the central front in the war on terror, well, we better get out of there and let local Sunnis regain a monopoly on the right to mass murder people in their area and get those al-Qaeda guys out of there. Instead, we continue to give them more incentive to kill Americans, to tolerate al-Qaeda and kill Americans. And then he said, al-Qaeda. Yeah, al-Qaeda's killing our guys. Al-Qaeda's killing our guys. Our guys are al-Qaeda guys. Their guys are al-Qaeda guys, and they're killing our guys. And Iran is training people who are coming to Iraq and killing our guys, which is obviously Joe Lieberman operating on the assumption that you're an idiot and that he can just say that and you'll buy it. Qaeda, 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 Iran. Got that? Qaeda, 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 Iran. Bullshit. Al-Qaeda does not work with Iran. They never have. You have no evidence of it whatsoever. The only Al-Qaeda guys in Iran are under house arrest. They offered to turn them over to us in exchange for some Mujahideen al-Qaeda terrorists that our DOD supports. And we refused them. There's no evidence at all. And people who say otherwise are liars. That Iran is tied with Al-Qaeda, works with Al-Qaeda, provides haven for Al-Qaeda, has anything to do with Al-Qaeda. And that's why Lieberman didn't really make that assertion, see? The same thing as the run-up to the Iraq war. Saddam Al-Qaeda, Saddam Al-Qaeda, the lesson of September 11th. Never really said Saddam did it, but sort of sounded like it. Well, same thing here. You'd be hard-pressed to find Lieberman saying, Iran is training al-Qaeda to kill Americans. But you will hear him say, Qaeda, 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 Iran. Qaeda, 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 Iran. Foreign jihadist pilgrims going to Iraq to kill Americans. Iran's training foreign jihadists to go to Iraq and kill Americans. Same thing. No difference. Ah, hey, looks like my good friend Shauna Kay, former co-host of the Chaos Report, is on the line. Hey, Shauna.
Hey, Scott.
How the hell are you?
When are we going to attack ourselves? Don't we attack all nations that support al-Qaeda?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. It seems like if America's backing al-Qaeda in Lebanon, and yet that's a casus belli for any country, for us to go and mess with them, it seems like Dick Cheney ought to invade his own office.
Yeah. That's what it looks like to me. Hey, you know that article that was in on antiwar.com yesterday? You mentioned it a little bit about Sudan being a partner in the war on terror. Did you get the idea that story was a plant? The reason why I'm saying that is because, you know, through the whole story, they just wax, you know, eloquent about, oh, and then, you know, they won't be in the high echelon, but they can work on the supply trains and blah, 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 just like. Now, if they were really working with Sudan in that way, would they come out to the newspaper and say, oh, yeah, we've got agents all along their supply train and they're Sudanese? You know, probably what's happening right now is al-Qaeda's killing every Sudanese guy they've got in their group.
And, yeah.
You know, it occurs to me maybe it's the other way around. Maybe they're trying to sow dissension in al-Qaeda to make it look like Sudan's on our side.
Yeah, well, I know that that was part of the spin, right? Was, oh, now we see why America won't go to stop the genocide. They're secretly buddies with these Sudanese. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm there.
Oh, yeah. That was part of the spin, it seems like.
Well, that seems like it might be a pretty good reason not to attack him, actually, if it was true.
Yeah. Boy, and I'm surprised that Joe Lieberman didn't come right out and say, Iran is behind the genocide in Sudan. Let's invade the whole goddamn world.
Well, there was that whole thing with Cheney trying to make it look like Iran is supporting the Taliban. And, the NATO chief came out and said, no, those weapons they're finding, that's all like from drug runners and stuff.
Absolutely.
It has nothing to do with Iran actually arming the Taliban.
Right. This is the incontrovertible evidence that Lieberman was referring to in that clip, that any bomb, apparently, that goes off anywhere that Americans are stationed must have come from Iran somehow. And yet, there's no evidence of that. And, in fact, there's a shit ton of evidence that that is not true. For example, in April, the Christian Science Monitor and Reuters reported that Lieutenant Colonel Scott Blackwell and his buddies in Diwania, a few miles, 100 miles south of Baghdad, found an EFP factory. Philip Giraldi, a former CIA officer who writes for antiwar.com, in his article that we're featuring today, right there at the top of the page, he talks about how all the initial reports of these new EFP, more sophisticated bombs, all the initial reports talked about how they were all machined exactly the same and must have come from a factory. But no indication that they were coming from Iran. He also talks about all the munitions experts in the former Baathist government and people who are perfectly qualified to make munitions. I think he quotes some British expert who did the calculations and said he thinks that they'll have enough explosives to continue in Iraq. They already have enough explosives. They'll be able to continue fighting this war at this level for the next 250 years or something. They've got plenty of material to make roadside bombs out of. And again, there's no evidence, only assertions. Incontrovertible. Joe Lieberman, you liar. There is no evidence that these bombs are coming from the Iranian government. And in fact, little evidence they're even coming from Iran at all.
That's right.
All right. How many lies did you count in that speech? Were you counting?
No. I just don't even, I have a hard time even listening to our politicians because, they just open their mouths and poop drops out.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how it is.
Yep. All right. Hey, thanks for calling in, Sean.
Actually, there was something else I wanted to mention.
Oh, go ahead.
It was that resolution that was passed congratulating Israel on the 67 war. The war where they bombed our ship, the USS Liberty?
They passed a resolution congratulating them for that?
Yeah, and it was just ridiculous because, I read article after article.
Oh, sounds like your phone cut off there, Shauna. Yeah, Shauna's got bad reception. All right. Yeah, I too have read article after article. If I can take a guess at it and attempt to finish Shauna's statement there. I, too, have read article after article saying that the 67 war doomed Israel, that they've never been able to, they've been on a path of increasing confrontation with the vast majority of their neighbors, at least the populations of the neighboring states, ever since then. They've occupied Gaza and the West Bank ever since then. And they've made themselves the most reviled country in the world, and America coming in a quick second place right after them for our support, for their policies of endless occupation. What a disaster. Oh, looks like Shauna's phone's working again. Let's see if we can get her to finish that sentence, see if she said what I thought she was going to say. Hey there.
Hey, and the whole thing is just ridiculous. There was nobody that was saying, hey, Congress, what do you think about the 1967 war? Do we back up Israel on it? They just came up out of the blue, and then they wonder why we're incurring so much hatred in the Arab world. The 67 war is something that just, that eats at them. They say that Faisal of of Arabia never smiled again after the 67 war. I mean, I know that's got to be an exaggeration, but, you know, this is something that really is important to those people over there. And then, you know, we're, our Congress just says, hey, congratulations to Israel for stealing land from Syria and holding, you know, and it's just, you know, it's just mind-boggling that they're just so completely removed from reality.
Yeah, I'm with you. Hey, in fact, I want to share with you this this piece here. This is Philip Giraldi in the Huffington Post. And just check out this here, this paragraph. Reinventing Terrorism for Prime Time by Philip Giraldi at the Huffington Post. All of the leading president aspirants from both the Democratic and Republican parties have embraced a fictional feel-good vision of the United States and its role in the world that is positively dangerous because it is so wrong. The story goes something like this. There is a gleaming city on a hill that is called the United States. The United States never does anything bad and is not to blame for anything that happens anywhere at any time. The U.S. has been targeted by evildoers called Islamo-fascists who hate America's freedom and who attack our cities for absolutely no reason. Islamo-fascists also hate Israel, which is a splendid little democracy that the United States has a moral obligation to defend. The war in Iraq is a necessary struggle to keep the evildoers from coming over to the United States to carry out their attacks. If one criticizes the war at all, it is in the context of it being a poorly executed diversion of resources that is impeding the real struggle against the self-same Islamo-fascists, which is going on everywhere all the time. Islamo-fascists have no rights. Torturing them is okay, as long as you don't call it torture, and only if it produces, quote, information that saves lives. The United States, already exceeding the rest of the world in military expenditures, must spend even more and build a bigger army and bigger Marine Corps to be truly safe. And then there is Iran, manifestly evil, and something like Nazi Germany. All options are on the table, goes the mantra, including preemptive war and the use of tactical nuclear weapons. And if that doesn't sum up the current completely fictional narrative that governs not just the American people's vision and perception of American foreign policy, but even that policy itself, seems like to me, is based basically on these ridiculous premises as laid out by Giraldi here.
Well, you know, what other country in the world would have the total and complete chutzpah to say, yeah, we support an international criminal court as long as we're immune from prosecution. What is that?
It's obvious is what it is. It's completely transparent. I mean, I'm going to go ahead and ruin it for everybody just because I got to tell you this, Shauna. Hopefully I'll be interviewing the director next week, but there's this new movie called World War IV. It's done by a guy who used to work for Governor Bush here in Texas. And basically, it's a TV, a movie version of my radio show, basically interviews with all the libertarians and paleoconservative opposition to the war and so forth. And in that, the token neocon featured in the movie is Michael Ledeen. And when they're talking about the weapons of mass destruction, he comes right out and says, look, that was just basically lies, I'm paraphrasing, that was lies because our allies, particularly Tony Blair in England, and I guess he's referring to, what's his name in Spain, they were told by their lawyers that if you go along with America on this war, you could be tried and hung as a war criminal. This is illegal, man. You can't do it. You have to get a UN resolution because, of course, that's how international law works. Aggressive war is perfectly okay if you can get Russia and France to agree about it on the Security Council. And so then aggressive war is wonderful and no longer a war crime under, you know, modern thinking. But so that's why, according to Ledeen, that's the only reason we went through the UN and made up all that propaganda about weapons of mass destruction. It's because we're war criminals and we knew that we were committing war crimes and we knew that we needed this lie to cover our ass. And he can try now to say that he's not part of we, but yeah, he is. Michael Ledeen was a contractor for the Office of Special Plans. He was the ringleader in all those trips to Rome. with Larry Franklin, the Israeli spy, and Harold Rode, Ahmed Chalabi, the Iranian spy's butt buddy. Michael Ledeen is a war criminal, and he's an admitted war criminal. Oh, yeah, those lies about the weapons? Well, see, we had to tell you that, otherwise you'd hang us from a rope.
I can't believe he admitted that.
It's insane. I'll have the soundbite for you by tomorrow's show, I promise. All right, thanks, Sean.
I've got to
quickly get through my list of lies here because I heard from Raji, and I'm gonna have my guest from Beirut on the line here in just a few minutes.
Oh, cool. All right.
Thanks for calling in.
All right, bye.
All right. Yeah, so, okay, more lies by Joe Lieberman. Let's see. Kata equals Iran. Kata, 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 Iran. Kata, 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 Iran. Kata, 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 Iran. Kata, 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 Iran. You got that? That's right. Isn't that easy? See? Iran and Al-Qaeda, one and the same thing. Kata, 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 Iran. Kata, 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 Iran. All right. Okay, next lie. We're helping the Iraqi government achieve victory and stability in Iraq. I don't think I really need to go into citing all the evidences of how untrue that is. Fatah, allies. Well, no, oh, actually, I skipped one. Oh, yes, Iran behind all of our enemies in Iraq, arming all of our enemies in Iraq, Qaeda and otherwise. Even though we all know that Iran favors the Iran-backed factions, that's why we call them that, the Dawah Party and the Supreme Council for Islamic Revolution in Iraq. They changed their name, but I like it. I like the old one better. Those are the guys that Iran supports, and those are the same guys that America supports. And in fact, the only reason that America supports them is because they're the only ones who need us. Everybody else in Iraq, every other political faction in Iraq wants us out. The only people who need us are the foreigners from next door. The ones we're accusing of killing our guys when all they're doing is backing the same factions we're backing. Fighting the same insurgency we're fighting. So, Joe Lieberman, count number four, is that four? Full of it, completely full of it. Fatah, allies. Iran is backing the evil Hamas in Gaza and the West Bank against our allies, Fatah. Our allies, Fatah? Fatah that Israel created Hezbollah as a side effect of attempting to destroy? Fatah that was frozen out from all of their tax revenue and basically, obviously, deliberately prevented from buying up all the votes on the eve of the historic democratic elections in the occupied territories? Fatah, our allies. You mean Fatah, our allies, that Israel, because of course our means Israel, somehow, even though I'm sitting in Texas. And Joe Lieberman was in what, you know, Virginia, D.C., New York, somewhere when he did that interview. Anyway, does it matter that Israel created Hamas in order to be an alternative to those secular commies, the PLO? The Fatah movement, huh? Huh? Does it matter that Israel created Hamas to be an alternative to Fatah? Oh, no. Fatah are our allies, and it's all Iran's fault that we have to deal with Hamas, says Joe Lieberman. So that's lie number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. EFP's incontrovertible evidence that the new explosively formed penetrator, better than before, roadside bombs, are coming from Iran. Incontrovertible evidence, he says. Meanwhile, I just read this morning in Philip Giraldi's article a quote from a British intelligence officer saying, actually, this is a British design that got in the hands of the IRA back in the day in a sting operation that went bad. That's how international terrorism got a hold of the specs on how to make these things. They got them from the British. And there's no evidence that they're coming from Iran. And what evidence that there is, that there's smuggling going on, weapon smuggling going on across the borders between Iran and Iraq and between Iran and Afghanistan. There's no evidence that Ahmadinejad is behind it, that the Ayatollah Khamenei is behind it. It's a country of millions of people. Guns are worth money, particularly on black markets. So, yeah, some bombs are being traded around. Meanwhile, who supports the Taliban in Afghanistan? Pakistanis. And who supports the Sunni insurgency and Al-Qaeda in Iraq? Saudi Arabia. Our allies are the ones supporting our enemies in these countries that we're fighting in. Our enemy, Iran, is backing our allies. How do you like that? Bomb them would be a good idea. There's another lie. Starting a world war, obliterating the Middle East, radicalizing millions and millions more people to want to kill Americans and Israelis. Oh, it's a great idea. Great idea. Some more incontrovertible evidence. Iran training Iraqi militants. Unfortunately, he couldn't cite any of that evidence, Mr. Lieberman. But boy, he sure did assert it, okay? Another lie. He also, just as a matter of course, asserted that Iran has a nuclear weapons program. Yes, we have to stop their nuclear weapons development, he said. And went right on. And Schaefer asked him a question and did not challenge his false premise. So I will. There is no evidence anywhere on Earth, at least that any Westerner knows about or has published anywhere, that Iran has a nuclear weapons program at all. They don't. What they have is a nuclear program. Their equipment sucks. They bought it at AQ Khan's garage sale. It's a bunch of crap, and it's all monitored by the IAEA. And no, they cannot enrich uranium to high percentages. Highly enriched uranium means above 90% U-235, and Iran can't do it. They have no nuclear weapons program. They also have no program for developing a nuclear warhead. If they were trying to enrich uranium to the proper thing, it would seem like they would also be trying to figure out how to set it off once they got it. But nope, there's no evidence at all. None. None. The CIA and the Mossad admit it, Joe Lieberman. There is no evidence that Iran even has a nuclear weapons program at all. You're a damned liar, Joe Lieberman. 200 Americans have died. As many as 200 Americans have died from these Iranian bombs. The EFPs. Oh, really? Out of 3,500, 200 have died from these EFPs, huh? These EFPs that it's incontrovertible come from Iran. And for the finale, for the grand coup de grace, for Joe Lieberman's outright lies, if we don't bomb Iran, if we don't start an aggressive nuclear war against Iran, which has no navy, they have speedboats, okay? They have no real navy, which has the most marginal air force of pretty much any air force in the world, which has no nuclear weapons, which has a third world economy. If we don't do that, we're going to have to fight them here. Now, I don't know if Joe Lieberman was, you know, on live satellite link from Tel Aviv, but I don't even think that's true that the Israelis would have to fight them in Israel. So who does this guy think he's bullshitting, besides Bob Schieffer? I'm sorry, folks. I got an email from Raji, fan of the show in Lebanon, said that he was under the impression the phone system was working properly again after the bombing there today. But unfortunately, I am not able to get through on the line. That's a damn shame. Sorry about that, Raji. Hopefully we can work this out and get you on the show sometime soon. Hey, maybe tomorrow. Harry Reid, majority leader of the Senate, reportedly has said that an attack on Iran would be destabilizing. Destabilizing, huh? Harry Reid, is that it? This is the leader of the Democrats. This is the Democrat with the most balls of them all, Harry Reid. And he's the biggest wuss that could possibly be imagined. He has absolutely no ability or intention to take on Dick Cheney or George Bush about any of this. Starting an aggressive, perhaps nuclear war against Iran would be destabilizing, huh? Might destabilize things a bit? Is that what you think, Mr. Reid? This is the leader of the opposition to the war party in the Imperial Senate, my friends. This is the leader of the opposition to the war party. Jeez, guys, you know, I was thinking that maybe if we bombed Iran, it might be a little destabilized. Oh, okay, sorry, so I'll just shut up. Nuke whoever you want. What a coward, Harry Reid. I mean, these damn Democrats. This is all their war now, and really it always has been. Their war in Iraq. But when the bombing starts in Iran, you know who to blame. I mean, clearly Cheney and Bush, and anyone else who follows their orders in such war crimes. But this coward, Harry Reid, and his dad, Nancy Pelosi, who at least has bigger balls than him, they refuse to stop it. They refuse to do a damn thing to stop the continued widespread destruction in Iraq, or the threat of an upcoming war with Iran. They won't do a thing about it, the Democrats. They have majorities in both houses of Congress. They could cut off the money right now. There are hundreds of billions of dollars in the pipeline already. They could pass a resolution that says, spend the money you got getting our troops out of there, and you may have none to bomb Iran, and you have no authority to bomb Iran, and you no longer have authority for this war in Iraq. Get those troops on airplanes and on ships and bring them home now. The Democrats have the votes to do that now, and they won't do it. They had a provision in their original bogus timeline bill that had loopholes you could drive an entire war through in it. But one thing that it did have was a statement just to remind the president that he does not have the power or the authority to start a war, only to carry out one declared by the Congress. And Nancy Pelosi took it out. And Harry Reid took that provision out of their defeated, worthless, loophole-ridden timetable bill. Because AIPAC called, the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee got on the phone and said, Hey, what are you doing? Trying to tell the president that he doesn't have the authority to start a nuclear war with our enemy. And what did Nancy Pelosi do? Whatever the fuck they told her, that's what. And same for Harry Reid. And they took it out. So, when the war in Iran starts, you know who to blame. The Democrats. The Democrats. Despicable. Despicable Democrats. Harry Reid. On Iraq, we're going to hold the president's feet to the fire, said Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid. Less than a month after bowing to Bush's demand, this is the Asian France Press. Less than a month after bowing to Bush's demands and approving a $100 billion war budget, Democratic leaders pledged a new challenge to the White House on withdrawal timelines, troop readiness, and curtailing the president's authority to continue the fight. Reid said, however, that Democrats, saddled with a thin majority in Congress, had raised unrealistic expectations about their ability to end the war among supporters who powered their takeover of Congress last year. We set the bar too high, he said, noting that under Senate rules, Democrats needed 60 votes in the 100-seat chamber to thwart Republican blocking tactics. That's bull. The Republicans can't pass a law without the Democrats, period. The Republicans can't pass a law to finance the war without the Democrats, period. Some Democrats have also been reluctant to make anti-war statements on any bill that provides funding for troops in harm's way, further winnowing the Democratic advantage. The latest Democratic tactic appeared to be an attempt to keep pressure on Bush and Senate Republicans ahead of an expected critical moment in September, when Congress is due to receive a report on the strategy to surge extra troops into the country. Reid, who earlier called for a moment of silence on the Senate floor to honor the 3,500th U.S. soldier to die in Iraq, wouldn't do a goddamn thing to prevent the next one, and the next one. What a coward. I wish Harry Reid was a senator in my state. Oh, man. How depressing, dude. Hey, you want to hear something cool? This is Charles Goyette interviewing me. It's only about 15 minutes long. It's Anti-War Radio.
This is talk show host Charles Goyette from KFNX with another special feature from my Phoenix radio show for antiwar.com. Let's get started in a way that'll be fun and enjoyable both for you and for me. And let me welcome by telephone from Austin, Texas, our friend Scott Horton. Scott is he is the guy behind Anti-War Radio on antiwar.com. Scott Horton is the guy that got the whole thing up and running, and from time to time, I submit radio programs or interviews to antiwar.com. They make them available on the internet to hundreds of thousands of people around the world. But Scott Horton is the lead guy on Anti-War Radio at antiwar.com. And if you haven't listened, all you have to do is go to antiwar.com, click on the top of the page where it says Anti-War Radio, and you can find out what Scott's talking about and maybe even hear some of the things we've had that you might have missed. Scott Horton in Texas. Good morning, buddy.
Hey, how's it going, Charles?
So what are the prospects of the war in Iraq ending look like to a guy at your vantage point talking to all the people you do?
Well, You're not going to like me for this, but
I like you anyway.
I think Donald Rumsfeld is right, or was right, on the day after he got fired when he leaked that memo that said, hey, listen, we have to kick these people off the dole, or else they don't have any reason to step up. All this whole, we'll stand down when they stand up is wrong. We have to start standing down, or else they don't have any incentive to stand up. And he was right about that, and Bush has decided to go the other way by increasing their welfare payment in the form of the surge and having even more Americans do the Iraqi government's work for them, which, of course, is just set up for what they're already admitting, is that they're going to stay forever. We're going to follow the Japanese or the Korean model and build permanent bases and occupy that place forever and ever. And since apparently we can't build a puppet dictatorship that'll keep us there because they want us, we'll create a puppet dictatorship that'll keep us there because they need us.
Well, one of our senators here from the state of Arizona was on one of the talking heads this weekend, Senator John Kyle, and he tried to poo-poo the business about the Korean model as though it's something somebody just made up. But, you know, it came from the White House press briefing and Tony Snow, the president's spokes dude.
Right. Well, Secretary Gates, I think, was the first to mention it, and he mentioned Japan or Korea, you pick.
Yeah.
So that's, 60 years of occupation and hard feelings.
Well, and here's the icing on the cake today, and anybody that doesn't know the story should go read it. New York Times story, it's the very top, the lead story on antiwar.com about America now arming Sunnis in Iraq, because the Sunnis that we're arming are going to take it to the old Sunnis that we aren't arming, because the old Sunnis are loyal to Al-Qaeda, but the new Sunnis are now our favorite go-to guys.
That makes perfect sense to me, right?
Doesn't it? Doesn't it make perfect sense?
Well, I'll tell you what. If George Bush, I should be more specific, if George Bush and Dick Cheney are really serious about starting a war with Iran, well, they better get our guys behind Sunni lines. Because I'm here to tell you, this whole Iraqi army that they're standing up means the Shiite militias, the Badr Corps, and the Mahdi army. And if America bombs Iran and our guys are surrounded by Shiite soldiers, they're all going to get shot in the back.
Yeah.
And so, if they're really planning on bombing Iran, they better get our guys safe behind Sunni lines and switch back to the Ba'athists, which is, what Khalilzad was trying to do a year ago.
Well, here's the deal, Scott. It's a coherent foreign policy that goes to war on false pretenses to create an enormous Shia power bloc in the Middle East that we are opposed to.
Mm-hmm.
And after empowering the Shia in Iraq, we began to go to war with them by empowering Sunnis, first of all in places like Syria and elsewhere, tilting Sunni, and now doing so once again in Iraq. I mean, is it your view that all this stuff is too complicated for the American people to keep up with, and so they don't realize that Keystone Cops are running this thing?
Oh, no, absolutely not. I mean, just look at your audience in Arizona. They have the opportunity to hear somebody tell it to them straight, and surely they understand. I mean, you just said it exactly right. This is, the end of Act One. This is, we're not about to withdraw from Iraq. This is, as you said, we've accidentally, I think, really created this power block. I don't think they really believed. Somehow Wolfowitz and them had convinced themselves that Iraqi Shia won't be too closely aligned with Iranian Shia and what have you. But when that turned out to be a fantasy, they've just decided, well, fine, we'll just bomb them too. And I think you're right. I think that's right where we are is about to move into phase two of, destroying the Middle East.
Scott Horton is my guest. He's on the line from Austin, Texas. Scott is with Anti-War Radio. He's the driving force between Anti-War Radio on antiwar.com. So tell me about antiwar.com and what's going on in the anti-war movement in America and its relative vitality based on your observations from your perch there.
I'll tell you, I think the anti-war movement is growing. I think the visual aspects of it, the people out in the street protesting, is is quite a bit less than we'd like to see, but certainly in terms of traffic, antiwar.com is growing all the time. We get more than 100,000 unique visitors a day.
A day?
Yeah, every single day.
Good.
80,000 something on Saturdays and Sundays. We feature the very best of the left and the right. We feature, of course, all of Charles Goyette's great interviews from the morning show here in Phoenix. We feature, you know, Pat Buchanan and Dan Ellsberg next to each other on the same day. We're, you know, very ecumenical. We're libertarians, plumb line libertarians like yourself, Charles, but we feature the best of the left and the right. And something that we really try to focus on a lot is bringing together the left and the right. I mean, really, there are a lot of issues in this country that we can fight over, but none of them are as important as stopping this empire.
Yep.
And, I mean, really, this empire, as you understand the economics of it much better than I do, Charles, this is an equation for bankruptcy here. We can't do this. And so if we can get the left and the right together to, you know, stop the country from being driven full speed over a cliff, well, then we can fight about, you know, some of these other issues, I think, later on.
All right. Hey, Scott, if we take a break, will you hold on so we can get a chance to, like, gossip and talk and fight about national presidential politics and stuff like that?
I'd love to.
All right. Scott Horton, my buddy from Texas, on the line this morning from antiwar.com, Antiwar Radio. Oh, sure. Sheryl Crow, Soak Up the Sun. That's absolutely perfect here in the Valley of the Sun on a day in which we're probably going to get a little bit of rain, believe it or not. All right, KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100, the Charles Goyette Show at 6:23 in the morning. On the line with us from Texas, Scott Horton. Scott Horton's blog is stressblog.com. He's anti-war radio. He's the driving force behind anti-war radio, which is at antiwar.com. All right, Scott, let's talk some presidential politics.
All right.
Like it matters.
Mm-hmm.
As though it were were to matter.
Uh-huh.
As though there weren't a permanent foreign policy establishment in this country.
Right, as if we have a choice.
As if we're going to have a choice. So,
well, that really cuts to the heart of it.
All right.
You look at either of these debates, you see that there's three that you're allowed to choose from each party, and everybody else is window dressing. And they make it abundantly clear on TV. Everybody knows. You have a pick of Edwards, Obama, or Hillary on the left, and McCain, Romney, or Giuliani on the right. And everybody else is just there to maybe liven things up a little bit.
Well, you know, you're right. I had, after both the presidential debates on CNN, the Democratic one and the Republican one, I've had their senior analysts on. I had Candy Crawley on. I had John King on. And I asked both of them, How was the lineup on the stage put together? I mean, you noticed on the last one, you had, you had Tom Tancredo way off in one end. You had Ron Paul way off on the other end.
Mm-hmm.
You had, you know, the three designated heavies all clustered together right in the middle. And they go something vague about, well, you know, the producers at the show kind of, you know what that means.
Yeah, they're deliberately, visually marginalizing the people they want to marginalize. Hey, look, honey. That candidate is literally on the margins of this debate. Well, don't pay too much attention to him.
Yeah, that's the picture. And, you know, if they were really motivated by showbiz, they ought to have Tom Tancredo standing next to John McCain to mix it up on immigration. They ought to have, Rudy Giuliani standing next to, Ron Paul so that Ron Paul can deliver the message to Rude. That actually makes for better broadcasting.
Right, but that's not what they want.
All right, so who gets the nomination on the Democratic side, in your view, if you had to guess?
Well, look, John Edwards can't even grow a whisker on his face. He's just too pretty. He's too pretty. It can't be him. Hillary Clinton, her negatives are just, you know, she starts off with 45% of the American population can't stand her. So I don't know. I guess either her or Obama, but I'd have to probably guess Obama on the Democrat side.
Well, does it tell you anything that that they're kind of rewriting their biographies to pretend that they were against the war from the beginning? I mean, we had a remarkable piece of audio here from Joe Biden. It was Joe Biden who was on CNN being asked about, do you regret your vote for the war in 2002? And he went through the most entertaining convoluted sort of twisting explication about how his vote for the war was a vote for peace and against the war.
So,
are we to take any satisfaction out of the idea that at least they want to rewrite their biographies?
I guess we could take a little bit of satisfaction that, you know, a super majority of the American people are now against this war, and that they know that they have to try to suck up to us for that. But, is it any comfort that Joe Biden is a liar? No, not really. I mean, he's supposed to be the head of our oversight of this administration now, right?
Yeah, well, okay, so the Republican side, Ron Paul, how do you handicap the long shot chances?
Well, you know, I have to tell you, I try to be a realist, and I don't believe that Ron's going to get the nomination. However, I don't completely write off the possibility. It is a fact that he does not have Lockheed money, and he never will have Lockheed money. But there are a lot of independent internet millionaires and so forth around this country who I think could really help out. And let's face it, the three front runners on the Republican side have major, major problems. John McCain is a liar. Nobody believes that he is Straight Talk Express. This war is his albatross, and he's going down with it. Forget it. Romney believes he'll be a god one day. Romney is for socialized health care and taxpayer-funded abortions, when depending on the election, and against them depending on, you know, the other one. And I think, although, you know, I'm not really, I don't really pick one religion over another or have any real prejudices along those lines, I think Southern conservatives are going to have a real hard time turning out for Mitt Romney. And Rudolph Giuliani is a transvestite. He was married to his cousin. Again, is for taxpayer-funded abortions. He wants to come and steal your guns. And so who's left on the Republican side who cares at all about liberty, about the Constitution, about the Second Amendment? It's Ron Paul. He's the only one. And they got nothing on him. He's been married to the same woman for 50-something years. His middle name is Ernest, for crying out loud. And that's exactly what he is. He's Ernest. They had nothing on him except that he wants to, you know, kick the millionaires in this country off welfare.
They'll try to figure out a way to slime him. You know, they'll look at his stance against the war on drugs and say, you know, he's he wants people smoking dope and high on drugs. And this is the future if Ron Paul were elected. And then they'll have, you know, Charlie Manson running around slashing people. And I mean, you know, they'll go after him.
Well, they will. They will. And although, you know, is anybody going to believe him when they look at Ron Paul, that what Ron Paul wants is for everybody to do drugs? Are they going to, they're going to have to let him respond. And of course, his answer is going to be that the drug war is worse than drugs. And let me count the ways, and he'll count the ways for you.
All right, Scott Horton. Hey, Scott, it's good to check in with you. Thanks. Anti-War Radio at antiwar.com.
I'm Charles Goyette in Phoenix for Anti-War Radio, a special presentation of antiwar.com.
Freedom is the freedom to say 2 + 2 = 4.
Yes.
How many fingers am I holding up, Miss?
4.
And if the party says there are not 4, but 5, then how many?
5.
Anti-War Radio, 646-6446-646-6446. If you're listening from out of town online, 512-646-6446. a damn line, you know it. But, you know, if you have to tell yourself that, that's cool. All right, this is Anti-War Radio on Chaos Radio 95.9 FM in Austin, Texas. I am your host, Scott Horton. And from the Agence France Press, the headline should be America Making Osama Bin Laden's Dreams Come True. But in fact, it reads U.S. Preparing More Airstrikes Against Al-Qaeda in Somalia. Al-Qaeda in Somalia. Shut up. God, I'm so sick of this. U.S. warplanes are overflying the northern Somali region of Puntland. Those poor people. Those poor, poor people. U.S. warplanes are... U.S. warplanes are overflying the northern Somali region of Puntland and in preparation for airstrikes against suspected Al-Qaeda fugitives. Airstrikes against Al-Qaeda fugitives. For those who missed the first hour, we began the show today with William S. Lynn's article on antiwar.com that should have been titled, "Hey, stupid, you don't fight counterinsurgency with airplanes, you dumb assholes." That's what it should have been titled. But anyway, the article was about how, man, that's not how to fight a counterinsurgency. In fact, wait a minute. Let me go back to the operative paragraph here where William S. Lynn makes it perfectly clear why not to use the military. Why not to use the Air Force in counterinsurgency. He's a tactical guy here. In this particular article, he's not challenging the wisdom of fighting this war at all. That's not his point. He's beside that point. He's saying, look, you guys are military guys, you're fighting a war, and you're doing it wrong, okay? Here's what he says. Quote, "It is a disaster on every level. Using air power in counterinsurgency. Physically, it inevitably kills far more civilians than enemies, enraging the population against us and driving them into the arms of our opponents. Mentally, it tells the insurgents we are cowards who only dare fight them from 20,000 feet in the air. Morally, it turns us into Goliath, a monster every real man has to fight." So negative are the results of airstrikes in this kind of war that there is only one possible good number of them. Zero. Said William S. Lint. Pretty straight and to the point. Okay, now, where's my stupid Somalia article here? This is from therawstory.com, Agence France Press. U.S. warplanes are overflying the northern Somali region of Puntland in preparation for airstrikes against suspected Al-Qaeda fugitives more than a week after U.S. warships shelled the area. The semi-autonomous regional, which, for the very same reasons I just read to you, obviously indiscriminate killing, cowardice, and Goliath, ships at sea shelling from offshore, certainly no better than bombing them from the sky. U.S. warplanes are overflying the northern Somali region of Puntland in preparation for airstrikes against suspected Al-Qaeda fugitives more than a week after U.S. warships shelled the area, officials said Tuesday. I wonder, if you're a CIA guy who's financing and training Al-Qaeda in Lebanon, do they do airstrikes against you? Or you're just following orders? That's different. The semi-autonomous regional government had authorized the overflights to pursue Al-Qaeda members believed to be hiding in the mountainous area, Puntland Security Minister Ibrahim Artan Ismail told reporters. Quote, "We know that American warplanes are overflying Puntland territory. This air surveillance is part of an agreement reached between Puntland authorities and the Americans," Ismail told a news conference in the northern Somali town of Basaso. "The warplanes are looking for Al-Qaeda hideouts, and when they get them, they will bomb them," he said, adding that the air operation covers areas where intelligence shows Al-Qaeda elements are hiding. Funny, they don't tell us how long this guy's been in charge of Puntland's security, Ibrahim Artan Ismail. Of course, you all saw it on TV when the endless coverage, right, of the American-backed proxy invasion of Somalia by Ethiopia back in December, and you've seen the endless, countless hours of TV news coverage on every channel about America's proxy war in Somalia, right? You know all about this, right? Yeah, it sounds to me like Islamil, the security minister here, is an American employee. And has his supposed authority at with American protection. America gave it to him. Sorry, my vocabulary's really kind of falling apart today. The point's the same, though, dang it. The warplanes are looking for Al-Qaeda hideouts, and when they get them, they will bomb them, he said, adding that the air operation covers areas where intelligence shows Al-Qaeda elements are hiding. Which, sorry, I brought CIA guys on this show, former CIA guys, say, oh, please. That's not true. Michael Scheuer, who is indeed for massacring Al-Qaeda and anybody near them, anywhere in the world that they are, said, oh, you're so right about how wrong it is that we've done this in Somalia. What a stupid move. Al-Qaeda in Somalia, God. Give me a break. That's a paraphrase. That's not what he said. Go back and listen to the archive. It's at antiwar.com in the anti-war radio section. But Michael Scheuer thought this was terrible. And he is a guy who was on the record for slaying Al-Qaeda with high explosives. But he didn't believe this at all. Al-Qaeda hideouts in Somalia. Give me a break. Residents told Somali media that U.S. planes have been overflying the area. Ismail asked residents of the inland mountainous area and the hilly shoreline not to worry about planes flying over them. A U.S. Navy destroyer shelled the coast on June 2nd, killing at least 12 Islamist fighters, including foreigners who were believed to be allied to extremist groups, Puntland officials said. CNN, see, this is the Agence France-Presse. If this was the AP, that would have just had a period at the end of the assertion, rather than attributing it to Mr. Ismail, the security minister. CNN reported that the destroyer was targeting a suspected Al-Qaeda operative believed to have been involved in the 1998 attacks on U.S. embassies in Kenya and Tanzania that killed 224 people. Earlier this year, U.S. plane bombed positions in southern Somalia after Ethiopia-backed Somali government forces ousted a powerful Islamic movement from the country's southern and central regions. Local elders said more than 100 civilians were killed. Yeah, a lot more. The targets were suspected Al-Qaeda operatives blamed for both the 1998 U.S. embassy bombings and the 2002 suicide attack on an Israeli-owned hotel in the Kenyan port of Mombasa that killed 15. Among the so-called high-value Al-Qaeda militants. Pardon me. My parentheses here. Everyone they've ever said was a high-value anybody turns out wasn't. Okay, sorry. Back to the article here. Among the so-called high-value Al-Qaeda militants believed to be in Somalia are Fazul Abdullah Mohammed from the Comoros, Kenya Salil Ali Saleh Nabhan, blah, 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 and this other guy, too, who's, oh, yeah, we swear to God, is a friend of Osama bin Laden's. Others are Sheikh Ahir Always, the hardline cleric heading Somalia's Islamic Courts Union. Oh, so to be a member of the Islamic Courts Union is to be Al-Qaeda now, is that right? Okay. If you say so, and Adnan Hashi Airo, the commander of the Islamists' militia wing, the Shabab. There you go. So if you're part of the government that America's overthrown in Somalia in favor of the warlords who were the bad guys during Black Hawk Down, then you're Al-Qaeda. A U.S. force is based in Djibouti and patrols the Indian Ocean, the Gulf of Aden, as part of the U.S.-led war on terror, in ironic quotes. U.S. intelligence says Al-Qaeda has stepped up operations in Somalia, a nation of about 10 million people racked by lawlessness since the 1991 ouster of a dictator, Mohamed Saeed Bare. Oh, that's funny. They leave out that actually all that was finally, once the international so-called community stopped intervening in Somalia, things got relatively peaceful, and people were actually able to make some money, and they were doing okay without having a centralized authority taxing everyone. And the Islamic Courts Union was basically the default. that people turn to, the elders in the neighborhood. You know, let's have our uncles discuss it and work out this conflict between us kind of thing. That's their tradition. That's their culture. And, nope, can't have that. Islamic Courts Union? Oh, that sounds like Al-Qaeda to me. Come on, guys, let's back Ethiopia's murderous, genocidal dictator and his in his invasion of Somalia. That'll help win the war on terror. Man, I guess I just all I got to say really about that is that I'm glad I'm not from Puntland. What a lucky kid I am, huh? Raised in Austin, Texas, not Puntland. It sounds like a really crappy place to live. You know, occasionally I see American fighter jets flying in the sky, and I think, wow, cool, man. It's too bad those are only made for killing people with, but that's a badass-looking jet. Look at that. I don't ever think, oh, God, are they going to bomb the shit out of us? I don't ever have to worry about that in Austin, Texas. I do, indeed, have to worry about getting shot in the back by a cop, unarmed, you know, like all victims of the Austin Police Department. You know, I wonder if the Austin Police Department has ever killed a person who was actually pointing a gun at them. Because I swear to God, I haven't heard in 10 years of an APD killing somebody who was actually threatening their life. Remember the retarded kid in his underwear who was running up and down Riverside Drive screaming and freaking out because the siren from the fire engine freaked him out? The ones that his caretakers said coming out of the morgue where they were done examining his corpse told the newspapers that he was like a three-year-old. He was running up and down the street in his underwear, freaking out because the fire engine spooked him. And he picked up a stick. Oh, I'm sorry, if you're a cop, that stick is a branch. He picked up a branch. And so a local Austin pig put 9 in his chest. Remember that? I guess that counts, right? He was brandishing a stick. This mental 3-year-old in his underwear who could have been taken down by this cop if he'd simply just twisted his arm. So I do have to worry about that. I do have to worry about peacefully walking down the street, minding my own business, and being murdered by the APD. But I don't have to worry about being bombed. I don't have to worry about seeing an F-16 in the sky and thinking, oh, Christ, I hope they haven't labeled me an enemy combatant today and they're about to level my whole block with a J-dam. That's what people in Puntland think today, right now, yesterday, around this time. Puntlandistanis, or whatever, citizens of Puntland, all day yesterday and today, real people in time and space. On the other side of water from here, granted, but actual human beings looking up in the sky, seeing American fighter jets flying low and seriously considering that they might be about to face high explosives, superheated shrapnel ripping their bodies apart, killing their families, killing their children. Because what? Because Dick Cheney claims that Al-Qaeda's there? Claims there's a suspect in the Africa embassy bombings there? I don't know why it's so hard for people to accept the fact that America is an evil empire, that our government is run by criminals, that the legacy of the revolutionary generation is basically dead, that America is nothing but a mass murdering substitute British Empire. What's so hard to accept about that? It seems to me like the facts would inundate the American people to such a degree all damn day long that they would have to come to the inescapable conclusion that, wow, the American government sure does mass murder people a lot. I'm asking way too much. How about this? How about wondering to yourself, why is the U.S. Navy shelling Somalia? To catch the embassy bomber from 1998? And are we going to have more or less embassies bombed as the result of shelling Mogadishu from battleships at sea? You know, I'm not sitting here calling for Bush's impeachment. Lord knows that Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid combined don't have the courage to even, you know, give Conyers permission to begin an investigation in the Judiciary Committee or anything. That's just not going to happen. The Democrats just don't care enough about this country to remove them from power. But it does seem like the American people at this point would have already completely withdrawn our consent for this. Is there anybody out there who has a son in the Navy? Is your son helping mass murder people in Somalia? Do you call that fighting for freedom? Do you approve of that? Is that what you thought was going to happen when your boy told you he was going to join the Navy and you said, I'm proud of you, son? You do that. You go join that Navy and be a real man. Is that what you sent him to do, to go shell Mogadishu? Well, but the security minister of Puntland claims that only Al-Qaeda guys died in the shelling, so don't worry about it. Wow, I don't know what to make of that. I just don't know what to make of that. America at war with Somalia. And not only do the American people not care, the American people don't even know. Because nobody in the media even cares. Really? I mean, I got to read the Agence France-Presse to find out about this stuff. They don't reprint that in the Austin American-Statesman or the Dallas Morning News. America's war in Somalia to support the warlords who were the bad guys last time. Oh, well. I need to find a better shtick, man. See, I got a problem. My shtick right now is, oh, Jesus Christ, I can't believe this. The lying and the murdering. They just murder people and lie about it. And then I sit up here and say, look at this, they're murdering people, and look at the lies that they're telling to justify it. And it's got to get old, man. There's got to be a better formula, man, for delivering this kind of thing. Because right now, I'm basically just running on coffee and righteous indignation at this point. I'm tired of seeing my government mass murder people in my name. I'm so far beyond fed up, I don't know what to do except just sit here and rant and rave into this goddamn microphone. Hey, guess what, everybody? It's not okay to go around starting wars. It's not okay to invade Somalia until Somalia invades us first. Then we can go and kick their ass. But since Somalia will never be able to invade us between now and the time the sun explodes, we have no purpose, no legitimate reason to mass murder Somalis. Oh, you got a problem with the Al-Qaeda guy there? Fine. Send in a team of snake eaters and go and arrest him then. Hire some local cops to arrest him and bring him here for trial then. It's not like we have a rule of law anyway. And hell, if we're talking about guys that bomb the embassies, that's American soil. You can try that in American court. Hell, some guys were tried in court for that. So if it's true that there are, you know, fugitives still at large in that case and they're in Somalia, go by all means get them and punish them. But invading Somalia, it's not all right. It's not okay. And it's also not okay that you have to listen to stupid pirate radio in Austin, Texas. I mean, the real fans of this station are all rolling their eyes because they just want to rock out and hear some music, man. But this is where you have to go. You have to listen to pirate radio in Austin, Texas to hear somebody say, hey, you know what? It's not okay to start an aggressive war against the people of Somalia. It's not okay to tell the Ethiopians, here's a bunch of money and a bunch of weapons. Help us mass murder these people and overthrow their government. Let's do a regime change. You know, it's not okay. It's not okay. That should be the name of the show. Hi, you're listening to Not Okay. I'm your host, Scott Horton. And here's a list of things that are not okay. Our government continues to mass murder people in Iraq. Our government was and shit, as far as I know, still is backing Al-Qaeda in Lebanon. Our government is preparing a preemptive nuclear war against Iran, which has no capability to defend itself whatsoever. Our government has backed Ethiopian invasion of Somalia and have been shelling them from battleships offshore and are preparing airstrikes. And that is not okay. America is putting so-called defensive missiles on Russia's front porch, picking a fight with Russia, the guys with the thousands and thousands of nukes, who ought to be our friends and trading partners in perfectly good faith now that they are no longer the core of the Soviet Union. Hell, they were our great trading partners all through the Cold War anyway. And now we have nothing to do but pick fights with them. And it's not okay. It's not okay that the Bill of Rights no longer exists. It's not okay that there's a Military Commissions Act and a John Warner Defense Appropriations Act and a Patriot Act and a Victory Act and the rest of this stuff to eviscerate your liberty. And it's not okay that the American Empire is headed full speed over a cliff right now. It's not okay that we're borrowing billions of dollars a day from China to pay for our government's mass murder. And it probably is a good thing that the show's over. See you guys tomorrow.
Jerome, put on that Bobby Womack.
Nah, girl, I want to go way back. Oh, yeah, check this out.
When I was young, I'm not a kid anymore. But some days I sit and wish I was a kid again. Back in the days when I was young, I'm not a kid anymore. But some days I sit and wish I was a kid again. Back in the days
when I was just a little nigga-ro, I looked up to my bigger bro, begged if I could kick it. So when he went out with girls, I could go tagging along, nagging. If she had a sis, maybe could mac a baby hood rat. Y'all remember way back then, when it was 1985, all the way live. I think I was about 10. One of those happy little niggas singing the blues that be always trying to bag with the shag and karate shit, saying yo mama black, his mama this, his mama that. Then he get mad and want to scrap. We stay mad about 10 minutes, then it's like back on a bike to play hide and go get it with the younger hoes by the bungalows, then switch to playing ding dong ditch when that gets old and too cold to hack it. Grew on a bomber jacket, you could tell the ballers cause they fell wearing gazelles. If they really had money raised, we sport knee case and all the girls had they Turkish link. If it broke, then they made earrings to it, like they meant to do it. But sometimes I still sit and reminisce then think about the years I was raised. Back in the days.
Back in the days when I was young, I'm not a kid anymore. But some days I sit and wish I was a kid again. Back in the days when I was young, I'm not a kid anymore. But some days I sit and wish I was a kid again.
And everybody
back in the
say,
days when I was young, I'm not a kid
and everybody
anymore.
Say,
but some days I sit and wish I was
when.
A kid again.
And everybody
back in
say,
the days when I was young, I'm not
when.
A kid anymore.
What?
But some days
when?
I sit and wish
back
I was
day.
A kid.
I'm still back in the days, but now the year is 87, 88. That's when my crew and I were in junior high in seventh grade. I hated school.
Wish it had grown up.
No doubt I couldn't wait to get out
and be a grown up.
But let me finish this reminiscing and telling about when girls were spelling tight corduroys like for the boys, basket weaves, Nike Cortez and footsie socks, and eating pickles with Tootsie Pops. And it don't stop. I'm glad cause when JJ Fad did Supersonic, it was kinda like a sport to wear biker shorts or to wear jeans. And it seemed like the masses of hoochies had poison airbrushed on they asses. Dudes had on Nike suits and the Pumas with the fat laces, cause it was either that or K-Swiss. I miss those days, and so I pout like a grown jerk, wishing all I had to do now was finish homework. It's true, you don't realize really what you got till it's gone, and I'm not gonna sing another sad song, but sometimes I do sit and reminisce then think about the years I was raised. Back in the
days. Back in the days when I was young, I'm not a kid anymore. But some days I sit and wish I was a kid again. Back in the days when I was young, I'm not a kid anymore. But some days I sit and wish I was a kid again.
And everybody
back in the
say,
days when I was young, I'm not
when.
A kid
and
anymore. But
remember some days
I sit and wish
I
was a kid.
And everybody
back in the
day,
I remember
when I
way back when. Back in the days,
when
back in the days,
and everybody say,
I remember way back when.
And everybody say,
I remember way back when.
And everybody say,
I remember way back when.
What?
Back in the days,
when?
Back in the days.
Well, it's the niggero. I figure that now I'm all grown up because I'm 18 years old, and guess you could say I'm holding down a steady job and crew steady mobbing, you steady bobbing your head, and I paid, so I got it made, but didn't always have clout. Used to live in South Central LA, that's where I stayed and figured a way out. I gave it all I had, so for what it's worth, I went from rags to riches, which is a drag, but now I'm first. So
hard in the nose, this is on our way up.
Yeah, we said that we was gonna make it since a kid, and we finally did, but sometimes I still sit and reminisce, then think about the years I was raised. Back in the day,
back in the days when I was young, I'm not a kid anymore, but some days I sit and wish I was a kid again. Back in the days when I was young, I'm not a kid anymore, but some days I sit and wish I was a kid.
And everybody
back in the
say,
days
I
when I was young,
back
I'm not
when.
A kid
and
anymore,
everybody
but some
say,
days I sit and wish
back
I was
when.
A kid.
And everybody
back
say,
in the days
I
when I was
way
young,
back
I'm
when.
Not a kid
what?
Anymore,
back
but
in
some
the days
I sit.